the game, boy, you gotta learn to play it right. You got to know when to hold up, know when to fold up, know when to walk away, and know when to run. You never count.
Fantasy fans, and welcome to the Roto Experts Fantasy Sports Show. I am your host, Chris Mitchell, and it is another Wednesday night at 9 o'clock Eastern Time, and that means we're doing the Week 4 Fantasy Breakdown game by game. We're going to go from the Thursday nighter all the way through to the Monday nighter. We're going to look at the breakdown of all the games. We're going to look at the matchup. We're going to look at the goods and the bads. We're going to make a lot of the flex decisions. And oddly enough, this season has been a strange one. Every fantasy year, I think we can say, is a strange one. And I think we say that this season is a strange one every single season. So I'm repeating myself in week four, probably the exact same things I was saying on this program a year ago. But it led to a nomination for best podcast. So I think maybe it worked. But that being said, we've got Josh Allen, probably a very talented quarterback, but a rookie with some serious issues. He has actually outscored Tom Brady this season. That shocked me. I wrote my trending and noteworthy column this week. It posted actually this afternoon. And when I was doing the research, that was one of the things that I came across. How does Josh Allen, a rookie that nobody feels is ready and a lot of people think is going to be a bust, though he has immense tools, how is he outscoring Tom Brady? But he is. Ryan Fitzpatrick is dominating fantasy sports, essentially. He has nothing but 400-yard passing games in the season. I thought Jameis Winston was going to be the automatic starter when the season started, as soon as he got back from suspension. Well, at this point, it looks like it's impossible that Ryan Fitzpatrick could possibly lose that job for at least a couple weeks. Now, if he plays poorly 2 or 3 weeks in a row, then he could. But the fact is, Ryan Fitzpatrick is leading one of the best offenses in football right now. That is another oddity. A strange, strange season. Patrick Mahomes, I don't know if you call it strange, but that dude's arm is sick. I'm actually watching the replay of the Chiefs and the 49ers as we speak, and he just overthrew, I don't think it was Tyreek Hill, it was number 11. So I don't think it's possible to overthrow Tyreek Hill, but I think it was number 11. It was probably Sammy Watkins, I don't know the numbers, but he threw like a 60-yard bomb with no effort whatsoever, and he overthrew the receiver. I mean, it's just silly. It's silly how good he can throw the ball. But anyway, lots of weird things going on. Unfortunately for Jimmy Garoppolo owners, he's done for the season. And I don't have a lot of sympathy for you. I have to be honest. The hype on Jimmy G, I never fully understood. He was interesting. I kind of wish that the Patriots had been able to find a way to keep him. But at the same time, I didn't think that Jimmy G should be starting over Tom Brady, for example. And that was one of the ways the Patriots would have been able to do that, or would have had to do that. They really couldn't franchise Jimmy G and hold him for a year or even two, because Tom Brady's going to play for at least two more years. So that wasn't really a viable solution. So really the only solution was get rid of Tom, bring in Jimmy G. And unfortunately, I wasn't in favor of that. But somehow I did want Jimmy G to be the Patriots' next quarterback over the next 8 to 10 years. I believed he was good. I believed he could make it in the league. But he wasn't that great last year in San Francisco. People seem to forget that. He threw 9 touchdowns and he had 7 interceptions, and he didn't even average 300 yards per game in the 5 games that he started. He averaged like 268 yards a game. So while everyone made him out to be a god, because I think he won what all but one of his games, so it's like he kept winning. He won 4 out of 5. He won 4 in a row. It's like every time he starts, he wins. So there was that phenomenon. But the numbers were not all – I mean, Ryan Fitzpatrick has been exponentially better than Jimmy G was last year. Patrick Mahomes has been exponentially better. I mean, I didn't quite understand the obsession with Jimmy G. Then in the offseason, before the draft season began, I saw experts. These aren't people that are just Jimmy G fans or 49er lovers or whatever. I saw fantasy experts who are actually paid to do this, paid a lot better than I am, to do this, were saying that at worst, this was their argument, is that at worst he was going to be a top 5 quarterback, that he was easily going to be a top 10, that was a no-brainer, which I think he could have been. He had a chance to be a top 10 quarterback. I don't think it was a lock, but he had a chance. But that worst case, that he was almost guaranteed to be at least a top 5. I did not see that. When you look at his relatively good but not special 2017, I didn't see that. So unfortunately, fans who believed that and bought into those experts, they relied on him as their one and their only quarterback, and you guys are screwed now. Well, you got to be listening to me, because when I hate, I actually have reasons for it, and I was not on board with Jimmy G. I was not. I own him in one league, unfortunately, because I just waited and waited and waited and waited to get a quarterback. And unfortunately, not only did I not get a second quarterback that I liked, which is usually how I like to do it, I ended up with Jimmy G as my best option without a good second option. 20-team league, Jimmy G was my man. And so that's not working out too well. But anyway, this week we're going to get into it with Brandon C. Williams from rotoexperts.com. You can follow him on Twitter at BCWilliams71. You can read a variety of his different fancy content over at rotoexperts.com. He writes everything. College football, Canadian League football, basketball, baseball, football. The dude is everything. He's a man with a plan, and so he's going to be talking with us tonight about week 4. We're going to break it all down. Quickly, we'll go over some of the ads and drops from the week, and then we'll get right into the game-by-game breakdown. We try to get out of here as quickly as humanly possible. So let me bring Brandon into the program. Again, I'm Chris Mitchell, your host. If you want to follow me on Twitter, it's at CJMitch73. If you want to join us on Facebook, we'd love to have you. It's the Roto Experts Fantasy Sports Show. I take your questions there. I answer them during the week. I help you with waiver wire acquisitions and stardom sit-ems. And I like to ask Brandon at the end of this program all of those Facebook questions. So if you want to join the Roto Experts Fantasy Sports Show on Facebook and get into the conversation with us, we'd be more than happy to bring you on board there and bring your name to the program. So we'll be getting to that at the end of the program. But let me bring Brandon C. Williams into the show right now. Brandon, thanks a lot for coming on. Love to have you again, back again. This is our third Wednesday in a row. And as I was saying, crazy, crazy season. Some weird things in week 3. Jordy Nelson explodes in at least one quarter. Tyler Boyd has a big week. Calvin Ridley, who I think a lot of people would probably drop the week before, has a 3-touchdown game. Helped me cash in DFS. Thank you very much, Calvin Ridley. And then we see the Bills beat up on the Vikings. I mean, if we thought we knew things with going into week 3, I think week 3 threw everything into just a complete and total mess. This is the NFL, and that's the way it's supposed to be, right?
It is. Sometimes it helps to have a week where everything just tends to go not according to plan, and week 3 certainly was it. One of the things that I have noticed going in after the first 3 weeks is that we're seeing the quarterbacks really dominating as far as the top of the rankings are concerned. Usually it's the running backs, but you know, you look at the fact that, you know, if it's not Alvin Kamara or Ty Gurley, or to an extent a Melvin Gordon, you know, and quarterbacks are putting up some monster numbers. When you talk about Mahomes, you talk about Breeze, Phillip Rivers has had a pretty strong start with Los Angeles. Ben Roethlisberger has looked, you know, Roethlisberger in the last couple of games. And Cam Newton has looked pretty solid as well. Those are the upper crust guys. And you still have quarterbacks that are off the slow starts, guys like Deshaun Watson, that are going to pick up their numbers as things go on. To me, the question you have to ask yourself is, that, you know, is this really a year where quarterbacks are going to be so dominant to where those who pick wisely are going to be carried for championship? Or is it a case of where, you know, it's the first couple of weeks of the season, and as the weather begins to cool off, especially in, you know, November and December, fantasy playoff time, that those numbers are probably going to get balanced out as running backs become a little more valuable? You know, we talk about the fact that, again, the quarterbacks that we mentioned, but at the same time, you're waiting for Tom Brady to get loose. You know, Kirk Cousins hasn't really had that monster game yet. You know, Aaron Rodgers, say, for week 1, you know, hasn't really had a big start. You got Carson Wentz back last week. So there are a lot of quarterbacks that are fantasy viable that are off to slow starts. And if you've got one of those guys, you kind of hold on to them. And you have to figure that eventually a guy like Mahomes is going to slow down Breeze eventually will slow down. They're going to have that game or two where everything's going to balance out. But right now, you've got one of those top-end quarterbacks. Life has got to be good for your team.
I'm actually glad that you mentioned that, because early in the draft season, guys like Scott Pianowski, who writes for, I believe it's either Yahoo or I think it's for Yahoo. He was one of the names that I saw most often. But a lot of the experts out there were saying that there are so many quality fantasy quarterbacks that you can really get a good value anywhere you want to. So for year after year after year, we've seen you don't draft quarterbacks early. But it seemed like we finally went too far. There's always a tipping point. And that's one of the things that I think I do well, that I think is most fun about fantasy sports, is bucking the trend, going contrarian at the right time. There's one thing to be contrarian just to be contrarian. That really just gets you headlines, but it doesn't accomplish anything, and it's not actually just smart analysis. But at some point, we do have a kind of a tipping point. For example, the last few years, wide receivers were always being drafted ahead. Antonio Brown was essentially the consensus number one overall pick, which 10 years ago, we had never seen that. Then all of a sudden, because of PPR and because wide receivers, and because it's such a passing league, all of a sudden, everyone was saying, well, yes, running back is thin, but wide receiver just scores so many points, I'm going wide receiver. So all of a sudden, that became something of a craze, is that the wide receivers were going before the running back, even though the running back were thin. Then this year, it actually flipped a little bit. It went back to it. We saw a lot of those top running backs going at the top of the draft because some of these wide receivers, for whatever reason, people weren't quite as high on. And the quarterback situation was one of those. I said, look, I'm not recommending you draft a quarterback early, but I was saying, you know what? If everybody thinks you don't pay for a quarterback early or relatively early, that means they're going to fall another half round, another round, another round and a half, another two rounds. All of a sudden, guys like Russell Wilson, who are basically locks for good seasons, is Russell Wilson going to be the best quarterback in the league? I don't know. But is he going to be top five? I'd be willing to bet. If you had to take Russell Wilson in the top five with a field, I would take Russell Wilson. I think he's going to be in the top five. And that was what I was saying. I just thought that the experts and the lemmings and there's just the whole world had gone too far with this don't draft quarterbacks early thing, and now we're seeing it. Now, one of my arguments was the reason why drafting a must-start quarterback was a good idea and not waiting was that, yes, a few guys every single year pick the correct one, but if you don't pick the correct guy to wait on, then you end up – I think most people fail. So my argument was, yes, if you ended up with Dak Prescott the 1 year that he was great, or if you had Deshaun Watson for the half a season, it looked like you were going to ride to a title if you had waited on Deshaun Watson, and unfortunately he had the injury, and it sank those hopes. But, I mean, my father drafted him last year in the late rounds as his second quarterback, and he coasted the first half of the season because of how good he was. So if you get the right one, then, yes, that strategy works. But only one or two people a year get it right. So if you have a 10-team, 12-team, 15-team league, only one or two of those people ended up delaying in picking the correct quarterback. Now, if you waited on Patrick Mahomes, then bang, you hit it. Now, he didn't drop all the way to like the 17th round or something, but he dropped outside the top 10 rounds or so. So if you hit that one, then wow, you really hit it. If you hit Ryan Fitzpatrick, if he keeps doing this, you really hit it there. But I agree with you completely. And DFS, I've cashed in the last 2 weeks. And the reason why, and I've been having Ricky Sanders on the program on Thursdays, and I'm going to have him again, I think, on Friday afternoon, you have to pick the quarterback that ends up with four touchdowns or you can't cash. I think that's been the equivalent. Some of these quarterbacks have been so good that if you end up picking a quarterback that just has a decent day, 290 and two touchdowns, you can't cash because someone is going to have Patrick Mahomes who has five or Philip Rivers or Ben Roethlisberger who has six. So I totally agree. This is the year. Maybe it's just the beginning of the season, and maybe things will cool down. Maybe now's the time to sell high and go get those running backs. Maybe now's the time to make those trades. But I agree with you. I think quarterback is a situation where now more than ever you have to have that stud, and if you don't, you're screwed.
I would agree. And like you mentioned, the start of the season has shown how important having a quarterback is. You can ignore the running back situation to an extent. Look, not everybody's going to get, not everyone's going to get the elite back. But you can't ignore quarterback to the point to where all of a sudden you find yourself in a situation to where you're hung out and you're looking at maybe those third and fourth tier guys to where you're looking at a Joe Flacco being an important part of your fantasy football team. It's one of those things where things run in cycles, and you have to figure that sooner or later that quarterbacks were eventually going to end up being more important. Remember, a couple of years ago, we talked about, you know, how important it was to get receivers early on, you know, especially after that monster year of the rookie class in 2014. Another thing is also, you know, you have to consider is the fact that you have so many teams going running back by committee to the point where if you don't get one of the elite guys, you've got to start mixing and matching. You know, you're in a PPR league, you want to make sure that you get a guy like a James White out of the backfield for you. You know, you want to make sure that, you know, you can get a guy who's going to be a goal line presence, a Le'Veon, LeGarrette Blount, I should say. You know, you want to try and mix and match to the point to where you can fit your running back situation to fill any need. But nowadays, with the way the ball is being thrown, especially the first 3 weeks of the season, if you don't have a quarterback, you might need to go out and grab one. Or if you're sitting around waiting for that waiting for a quarterback, your guy to come around, basically, you find yourself in a situation to where you're going to end up, you know, to a point to where it's going to be too late. You know, this isn't baseball where 3 weeks in, you know, you can mix and match and get things taken care of. If you're behind the eight ball 3 weeks into the fantasy football season, you're going to have to start looking at things in a more drastic sense.
Yeah, the one thing I would say against what we're arguing for, and again, I'm on board with you on this for the most part, is that there are a lot of good quarterbacks. So if you want to go out and trade for one, someone who would be willing to trade a quarterback probably has two of them. You know, they drafted two. I like to draft a quarterback. So maybe they have Phillip Rivers and Kirk Cousins, who are both top 10 quarterbacks. There's not a lot of value in having two. If you can get value in trade, I recommend doing it. I like to have two, but if someone wants to offer you something of value where you can actually improve your starting team, then I'm all for trading one. You know, I don't refuse a trade for a flex player who's going to start for me every single week at flex just so I can carry a backup quarterback. I mean, I'm not crazy or stupid, though I've been claimed to be both very many times. So there are a lot of guys out there that are pretty appealing. I mean, Matt Ryan's having a resurgent season. Ryan Fitzpatrick and Mahomes were cheap guys that came out of nowhere. Phillip Rivers, I think, is a very underappreciated guy. I thought he was falling way too far in drafts. He's having another big season, especially with the touchdowns. So Deshaun Watson's underappreciated. Joe Flacco's having a pretty nice season if you want to just have an affordable guy. The one argument against what we're saying is that, A, Russell Wilson hasn't been very good. Maybe he's a good buy-low guy. There are a lot of guys out there that you could probably trade for at a relatively affordable price and end up with a pretty decent player. And so that would diminish kind of some of the things we're talking about. But we'll see. It is only 3 weeks. So I think 4 weeks from now, this will probably all shake out and it'll get back to being, you know, more reasonable. It'll get back to being more what we expected. So that's the one thing, is that through 3 weeks, people shouldn't go crazy and all of a sudden start changing everything up. It is still too early. So that's just something to think about. But Brandon, let me ask you real quickly about the ads and the drops, and then we'll get into the game because we don't want to be here forever. I'd like to get this program over as quickly as we can, breeze through everything, but I do want to get through some news before we actually get to the actual game-by-game breakdowns. And the guys that I'm seeing in the most added positions this week for over at ESPN.com, a lot of the guys I wrote up in my article this week, so I figured since I was talking about them, since I was looking at them, since I was giving an analysis of what to expect from them going forward, I want to ask your opinion on whether you believe in them or not. Because they're most added, but that doesn't mean that they should have necessarily been. But I was high on them. I actually was going to start a couple of them in DFS last week and didn't. For example, this first one, Tyler Boyd from Cincinnati. Added in 39.2% of ESPN leagues. He went from 11% to over 50. I'm on board with this guy. Now, he's only a flex in my opinion. He's not an RB, a wide receiver too yet. But I like the skill set. I like what Cincinnati's doing offensively. And obviously, he has a good week and everyone's on board. That's the way that this works. But are you buying or are you selling Tyler Boyd?
I'm going to buy into Boyd. He's a classic case of a young receiver who just needed time to develop. He's in his third season now. And with teams focusing on A.J. Green. You needed a receiver that was going to be able to step up and make defenses pay for it. And you look at what he's done over the last 2 weeks. He's got 12 receptions. He's got nearly 230 yards. He's got touchdowns in each. So you've got a guy who's averaging 17 fantasy points per game at wide receiver. You certainly want to run with him. He's a good play this week against the Falcons. That's in a domed environment on Sunday afternoon. So you can get the sense that Dalton's going to keep him involved in that offense, especially when you consider the fact that, you know, Gio Bernard, we'll touch on this later, Bernard's a questionable case right now. So there could be an outside chance where Mark Walton could get the start on Sunday. Could be very interesting, but, you know, I like Boyd, and I would definitely buy on him.
Another one who I wasn't high on him because I'm not usually high on rookie wide receivers. The Mike Evans, you know, Odell Beckham Jr. year, those are rare. Usually you don't have very many truly fantasy viable rookie wide receivers. But I just liked where Calvin Ridley was falling in drafts. It just felt like you were drafting him as one of your last three or four players on your bench. And when it's a rookie with some ability, especially in a good spot like Ridley is in Atlanta, so I ended up owning him in a lot of leagues because I just, again, he fell right. Usually rookies get overhyped and they actually get overdrafted. I thought Ridley and even Moore for the Panthers, even though he hasn't done anything this year, but I thought they were falling to a good spot where if they ended up having good seasons early on, you got yourself a bargain. And if they busted, essentially, you could just cut them. And that's what I did. I cut Moore and I actually cut Ridley and then added him again because I needed to find space, so I cut him. But I wanted to own him, so when I could, I re-added him. He was added in 32.5% of the leagues in ESPN, went from 38% ownership up to 70%. Three touchdowns in one game. It's obvious why everyone's adding him. But are you buying or are you selling Calvin Ridley?
I will buy on Calvin Ridley. No, you're not going to get three touchdowns out of him again. You'd like to think that that's not going to happen. But I like him. He is exactly what the Falcons need. And if you've noticed over the past couple of weeks, their red zone offense has shown some life, and I think a lot of it has been because of Calvin Ridley. Yeah, he does have the big play ability, but you know, when you have to account for both Ridley and Julio Jones to go along with their backs, Freeman and Coleman, out the backfield, in the red zone, you know, guys are going to get open. Ridley's an exceptional talent, explosive athlete, a guy who is in a right fit at the right time. And I think that he's going to be able to continue trending upward. So, decent matchup this week against Cincinnati. I would probably look at him as a flex option. But if you look at him the rest of the season, he's a guy you certainly want on your team.
And now this one, I got to say, I'm not buying into, but I want to get your opinion as well. Goes from 7% ownership up to 34% ownership. And when you look at ESPN, that's a 27% jump. And when you look at ESPN, you probably get 25 or 30% of the leagues where they're not actually played. People do a draft and then just essentially ghost their teams. And maybe it's not as high as 25 or 30%, but I wouldn't be surprised if it got that high. So essentially you've got 70 or 75% of ESPN leagues are actually what I would call active, or at least partially active or significantly active. Let's say 7 out of 10 owners are active. So you're looking at 70 to 75% of leagues where they're actually active participating leagues, and Baker Mayfield is owned in 34% of them. So that's almost like he's owned in half of ESPN leagues. And I understand, you know, he's a rookie. He had a nice little start. But are you buying into, with all the quarterbacks, are you buying into Baker Mayfield?
No, I'm not going to buy into him. I think he'll have his moments where he will put together some decent fantasy totals. He's in the offense to do it. He's also a guy who's going to be able to sneak and give you a couple running touchdowns as well. But I'm not going to buy him over the course of the full season. After all, you know, the guy is a rookie. He is playing on a team that finished 0-16 last season. He's in a tough division with playoff caliber teams in Baltimore, Cincinnati, and Pittsburgh in there. So, no, I'm not going to get too excited about him. Again, like I said, I think that he will have a game or two where he's going to get you excited. But unless you're in a keeper dynasty, there really isn't much of a reason to have Baker Mayfield on your roster.
Yeah, I think he's even a reach in leagues where you got two quarterbacks starting. I mean, maybe he's worth owning as a third to see if maybe something comes about. But Yeah, I think that's a reflex action that's a little bit irrational. Last one before we get to the game-by-game breakdowns here. And this is a guy that I wrote up for the article this week, only because in my article I try to point out guys that maybe most people don't realize, whether they're performing much poorly than anyone realizes or significantly better, or if they're doing things that are kind of strange. I've mentioned Tyreek Hill a bunch of times. There's not a lot of reason to talk about Tyreek Hill when it comes to fantasy unless you're looking at daily, because price affects whether you want to own him or not. But the way that he does it is weird. He does it without a lot of opportunities, and you just don't see that very often. So a guy like a Tyreek Hill, I might mention. This one is Javorius Allen, who's averaging 2 yards per carry. And yet he's been active in the passing game, and he's got a lot of touchdowns. He was added in 21% of leagues. Now, again, a guy who doesn't run very well, who isn't grossly explosive, a lot of times those guys don't find a lot of love out there, but yet he was only added in 21% of leagues. What are your thoughts on Allen and whether you're buying or selling him?
I would put a buy on him. Obviously, it looks like he's going to be the short yardage guy for the Ravens. He's got touchdowns in each of the first three games. Good receiver out the backfield. He's got 13 catches on 17 targets. Also has a receiving touchdown as well. That touchdown rate's going to cool off at some point. He's a guy that, you know, if you have him, he's probably more of a sell high right now, because it's pretty difficult to see how much higher his ceiling's going to get if you're scoring touchdowns every game. So I would venture that I would just go ahead and move him if I could. I think that in a PPR format, he could be pretty solid, but the non-PPR, he's probably a guy you probably should be thinking long and hard about moving.
Yeah, I mean, 2 yards a carry, it's hard not to just – that's disgusting. I mean, and he's got competition. Alex Collins is – I actually like Collins – as a kind of, I like his skill set a little better, but he's not explosive. He's not filthy good. But I've always kind of liked Collins for a very low end, you know, better skill set than you would think for a guy who's just mediocre. I guess that's a very low bar and grading on an excessive curve. But I've always just kind of liked Alex Collins just a little bit. And so when you've got competition there, Allen is just not as talented as him. But like you said, he's living on the touchdowns. And for now, it's looking good. For now, I think he's probably a flex, but I agree. 5 weeks from now, he probably goes back to being nothing. So, and the fact that he goes by the nickname Buck, you got to like that at least a little bit. So he's got the name, he's got the touchdowns, but I agree that eventually it is going to fizzle.
Yeah, at some point in time, he's going to cool off. Is he someone I would want to run with this week? Probably not. It's a game, you know, it's Pittsburgh on a Sunday night. You can justify having him in there and a touchdown because of what he means at the goal line. But, you know, in most standard leagues, he's a guy that, you know, is pretty much depth, just more than he is someone that you're plugging into the lineup.
All right, let's get into the games. And I got to praise Fox. I suspect they had some leverage over the NFL when they decided to take over the Thursday night games, because as I've said for years now, ESPN basically got bent over. Not only did they pay a ridiculous amount of money in order to carry the Monday night football game, they had the Sunday nighter, and yet they just grossly overpaid in order to get the history and the legacy and the pride of having Monday night football, which it just isn't that anymore. I don't know what – that's why ESPN has collapsed and why there's so little talent in that on that network. But they paid all that money for Monday Night Football, and they get shafted every single week. This Monday was probably one of the best Monday Night games they're going to ever have. Now, they'll have a big name from time to time, but it's usually a crappy matchup. Fox on Thursday night, Vikings-Rams, early in the season. Granted, the Vikings coming off that Bills game, it's kind of a tough one. You know, it would have been nice if they had this really impressive win over somebody and they were going up against the Rams, but that's a minor blip. Vikings-Rams on Thursday night. Are you scared of it, the fact that it's week four now, that the quality of the game? I ask you about this every week. I'm going to ask you probably – this will probably be the last week. Are guys banged up enough now where Thursday night is going to be a lesser game because of the short rest, or are we still too early in the season to really be concerned about that?
I don't think there should be too much of a concern about it for right now. You know, and I think maybe it's a case of where you look at it maybe week seven or week eight when guys are really starting to feel the banging up of the regular season. This is a good matchup. You're certainly going to plug Todd Gurley in, obviously. But if you've got Vikings, yeah, there's going to be some sense of concern, especially with the way that they looked last week. One thing you want to look at is, you know, the receiver DB matchup. Talib is out for a few weeks, so that could definitely upgrade Stephon Diggs and also Adam Thielen, because they're going to be facing, you know, one less quality defensive back.
Yeah, this is the kind of game that I really hate. I love to watch it, but I hate it from a fantasy perspective, because both of these teams are good defenses, maybe even great defenses. Great's probably a reach, but very good anyway. These defenses have a chance to be very good, and maybe they could be great. I mean, we don't know yet. It's too early to go that far. But both of these, the Vikings are considered a very good, one of the better five or six defenses in football. The Rams added all that talent, and they're supposed to be top five as well. But they have so many good weapons on offense, too, that you can't bench Stephon Diggs. You can't. It's tough to bench Cooper Kupp. And granted, there are so many weapons on the Rams, whether it's Cooks or whether it's Woods or whether it's Kupp. There are so many good players. It just seems like it's a situation where they have a tough matchup. They're probably not going to have the kind of game you expect. Someone will, but not all of them. This isn't a game where everybody gets theirs. This is a game where maybe Gurley goes crazy, or maybe Woods or maybe Cooks has the big game for them. And maybe Diggs or maybe Thielen has the big game. But it's hard to see how four or five of these guys have a big game, which if they weren't playing each other would probably be the case. So you can't sit them, but at the same time, you probably have to expect that they're not going to be as good as they usually are because the matchups aren't as good. Now, the over-under is at 49.5, which is one of the higher ones. So they're still expecting points, even though the defenses are good. I'm a little surprised to see the Rams favored by 7, but they are at home. Traveling to the West Coast is always trouble. And the Vikings are coming off a really ugly game against the Bills. But to me, I'm not a gambler. Don't take my advice. I usually lose. But that line seems high to me. Is there anyone in this matchup that you would usually have, at least as a flex or a serious flex consideration, that because of the matchup you're sitting out? Because these two teams seem like they have too many guys that fit to fit that description. I don't think any of them should be sat. But if it's a tough matchup, you know, you can see why maybe you would. Does anyone fit that description in this game?
I think that, you know, you might hesitate a bit on the Cooper Kupp. You know, he's had two pretty good games to start the year. But if you've got better matchups going into the weekend, you probably might want to lay off of Kupp. You know, this is the type of game where, you know, would we be shocked if they hit the 49? No. But would we also be shocked if you end up with, say, a 17-13 type ball game? And if that's the case, and you went all in with your Vikings and Rams, you're already burnt right off the bat, you know, going into week four. So I would probably be hesitant about starting a guy like a Cooper Kupp. You look at the Vikings receivers. Both Diggs are top 12 caliber wide receivers, so those guys obviously are going to start. Would I play Cousins against the Rams? I don't think I would. If I had a better quarterback matchup, I'm probably sitting Cousins out on this one. I'm not going to bench Jared Goff. He's at home. He certainly has the weapons. He's off to a strong start, and as we saw last week, the Vikings, you know, are as good a defense as we thought they were, especially when you think about how Minnesota was just pushed around by a bad Bills team that everyone just figured was just going to get the hell kicked out of them.
Yeah, last week a guy that was kind of popular was Latavius Murray. I don't know yet what we're going to get from Cook if he plays or if he doesn't play. I haven't heard this. It sounds like he may or may not play, but even if he does, is Latavius Murray maybe a guy you're sitting?
Yeah, I'm probably going to look at sitting him. And right now it does look like they will give him more of the carries for right now. It does look like Dalvin Cook will play on Thursday, but, you know, I'm really going to be hesitant on how I would use him. He's not someone that I'll really, you know, rely on this week. It's just too strong of a matchup to have him in there.
Buccaneers at the Bears, 1 o'clock game, over under 6.5. The Bears are actually 3-point favorites, which isn't a surprise. Last week, we saw, I guess, what we want to know from Ryan Fitzpatrick, which is the monster season continues. He threw for over 400 yards again. But if you watch the game, you saw why he's not a full-time quarterback. You saw why he's such a big story, is that sometimes he is really ugly too. And not just the monster beard or pimped out in the 70s, you know, gangster pimp look like he was the other day after week three. He had some bad throws. He looked pretty ugly, and he probably lost them that game. They probably should have won that game if not for him. But nonetheless, from a fantasy perspective, he was still a monster. What are your thoughts on Bucks-Bears?
I would probably look at moving Fitzpatrick this week. I don't think I would feel comfortable playing him. Sooner or later, he's going to eventually cool off. He had a good week, for the most part, on Monday night. Still got 30 fantasy points out of him, despite the fact that he threw three interceptions. But I don't think you're going to see him throw the ball 50 times, and he sure as heck isn't going to get 411 yards on that Bears defense. I think they're going to come out. I think the Bears will just go typical Bears. They're going to go ball control offensively, keep their Buccaneers defense on the field, and when Tampa does have the ball, they're going to go balls to the wall and really just put a lot of pressure on Fitzpatrick, because right now Tampa's running game is not reliant. And if you can constantly put Tampa in second and eight, third and seven type situations, especially a streaky quarterback like Fitzpatrick, that definitely bodes well for your defense. So this is really a week where you might want to start putting your feet off of the wagon, off of that bandwagon. I'm not saying it's a complete crash, but it's one of those cases where if you've got a better quarterback matchup, I would probably think about sitting Fitzpatrick here.
I am sort of a fan of the Bears as a football team, but from a fantasy perspective, I struggle to find much to like on this team. I'm trying to be bullish on Allen Robinson because I liked him before, and he's getting no love now. And whenever someone isn't getting any love at all, I'm at least willing to jump on board and try to be somewhat of a supporter. I'm, you know, contrarian. But it's hard to get really excited about him. And the same thing goes for Anthony Miller. He looks like an intriguing talent, but we're not seeing much there. Jordan Howard, again, a guy that I think you got to respect as a flex guy, but he's a limited player. The Bucks offense is fantastic. So are you going all in? Are you starting everybody because it's against the Bucks, or are you reluctant because, let's face it, like I said, the Bears, from a fantasy perspective, pedestrian is probably being polite.
It's probably a good way of putting it. You're going to play Jordan Howard. I think he's a low-end RB1. You know, he's going to get the carries, and if they're in the red zone, obviously he's going to get the opportunities. I think you're certainly starting Allen Robinson more along the lines of, say, maybe a wide receiver 3, maybe a flex option. The thing that concerns me about Chicago is that you've got Trubisky averaging less than 6 yards per attempt. You're not going to go far with that. You know, sooner or later, Matt Nagy's going to have to let him loose and give him the opportunity to take some shots downfield. And this Buccaneers secondary is a golden opportunity for them to do so. The guy that I like is Trey Burton. He's been quiet the first three weeks of the season, only with 15 targets. But I think that this is the kind of game where he could exploit the middle of the Tampa Bay defense. And this is something that we've seen over the past couple of weeks. Zach Ertz had a big week against Tampa in week two. We saw McDonald, that monster stiff arm, kind of one of the highlights of week three. So what we're seeing is that the Buccaneers can be suspect to athletic tight ends, and Burton certainly fits that mold.
The game that I think is interesting for a lot of reasons, I'm a Patriots fan, but interesting from a fantasy perspective, Tom, like I said in the opening, Josh Allen outscored Tom Brady, not this week, but this season. And we're 3 weeks into the season. Josh Allen has not been playing very much, and he's already outscoring Tom Brady, who's played all 3 weeks. Let me ask you broadly, and then we'll get into the kind of the specifics. We'll get into the weeds a little. Are you downgrading every single Patriot, and are you sitting every single Patriot except for, I think it would be sacrilegious to sit Gronk, but he was sitting everybody else rather than throw the kitchen sink, which used to be the Patriots' way, which is every Patriot in a decent matchup, you start them all and you just hope for the best. Is it just the opposite now? I mean, the Patriots' offense has been miserable.
It has been miserable. They've only got 203 yards receiving out of their wide receiving core right now, and they've only had two big plays of 20-plus yards, actually four out of their wide receivers so far. I'm not starting any of the Patriots receivers this week. There just really isn't anything exciting about the prospects of hoping that Chris Hogan can get you a solid game. Josh Gordon probably is going to play, but again, snap count is really going to be a big factor. Plus, the Dolphins have done a pretty good job fantasy-wise against wide receivers this season. Like you said, you just aren't. Brady, if you've got him, I would play him. He's going to end up making, chicken salad out of chicken, what. But to me, the guy that I like is going to be White. I think that you look at White, this is the type of game where he's going to have some value, especially in a PPR format. You got Rex Burkhead on the injured reserve list. You've got him on the injured reserve list, and you've got an opportunity to see a little bit of Sonny Michel on Sunday night. I think you're going to see a lot more Michel this week, but I think White is a good play here in PPR formats.
With Burkhead being out, he wasn't really all that productive, but the fact that you just get his touches out of the way, it probably does help somebody. Last question about the Patriots. Chris Hogan was a guy that was going a little higher than expected. I kind of jumped on board early in the season, and then I was like, wait a second here. I don't actually think Hogan should be going this early. So I actually was drafting Hogan, and then I got him as a possible guy. And again, being a Patriots guy, I want to own Patriots. I usually am actually more of a critic of the Patriots than other people. I'm more critical of them. I'm tougher on them. I expect less of them. So I rarely own Patriots. But I jumped on Hogan in early drafts in early August or something, maybe mid-August. But then I started drafting other guys. Allen Robinson was around at the same time that Hogan was. I started taking Robinson instead. And then all of a sudden there was some flex running backs that were available. I started going that way. We're going QB. And I don't know why I loved Hogan at the beginning of draft season, but I lost the love in the middle and went nowhere near him at the end. But now I'm hearing about people, because Josh Gordon's in the fold, that all of a sudden you got to cut him. To me, that seems like an overreaction going the other direction. What's your take on how you handle Hogan? He hasn't been great. I mean, Philip Dorsett's actually been better than him. So if you want to look at the numbers and say, look, I'm benching him purely because he hasn't been good, I can understand that. But I don't fully buy in that Josh Gordon all of a sudden killed Chris Hogan. How are you handling Hogan this week, and are you cutting him?
No, I'm not going to cut Hogan, but I'm not going to play him, but I'm not going to cut him. This is probably the last week where he would have some value, because you've got to figure that if Gordon plays Sunday, he's going to have a week under his belt in week five. Always going to be, the fact that Julian Edelman's going to return. So Hogan's going to fall down the pecking order considerably when it comes to the New England passing game. He's going to go back to where he was for a good chunk of last season as, the occasional big game type guy, but someone that, you're really not going to rely on. I think a lot of people got enamored with what he did the postseason, especially the Super Bowl, and thought with Edelman out for four games, he could probably do a repeat of what he did. We were wrong. He's a good receiver, but obviously he's not good enough to where, he's going to be a difference maker. If you can pick him up on the cheap, I still think there might be some buy low on him, because I do think that he will have that two or three game stretch where he'll have some value, especially in a deeper league. But I'm not going to cut him.
Yeah, see, for me, my take is on the a little bit on the other side of this, which is, he's not a number one receiver, obviously. I mean, he doesn't have the skill set to be a number one, but he's not even really a number two. The reason why I think that he had a pretty nice season was that the Patriots had a lot of weapons, and they like to dump it to White, or they like to go to Gronk, or whoever it was. I think the more receivers that are there, the less the defense can focus on Hogan, and that's where he becomes viable. You know, all of a sudden Edelman is in one area of the you put Hogan in on the outside, but you let Edelman run out of the be the possession guy who gets the first downs and he jukes guys out. You got Gordon going deep. You got Gronk in the middle. To me, with all of those weapons, and then you throw to James White out of the backfield, I think that actually makes Hogan more valuable. Now, the targets won't be there, and I think that's the argument that you're making. You didn't say targets specifically. Well, I think you did actually say it. The targets are going to be probably less. But I think he's much more likely to be open, and he's much more likely to have productive games because the defense can't focus on him at all. If you're going to pick Gordon, Gronk, Edelman, or then one of the running backs out of the backfield, Hogan is fifth in that list defensively. Who's going to be covering him? Are you telling me that your nickel cornerback is going to be able to cover Hogan? Not that he's a great player, but when the nickelback is on him, I think that's a matchup that's actually really good. So I think it's contraindicated that when the targets are going to be less, a guy's actually going to get better. But I actually think Hogan, that's the case. He can't get worse. And if you saw him in previous years, he was better when the team was better.
I would agree, to an extent on that. He's going to be someone that is going to be more valuable once the Patriots are at full strength, per se, maybe about 3 weeks from now, once you've got Edelman back in full game shape, you've got Gordon a few games under his belt, and you've got ideas to how they're going to utilize him. I think that there will be some value there. The Patriots run a lot of 4 and 5 wide sets at times, and he's going to be in those formations. And when they do run those, you can't cover everybody. You can't double cover Gronk. You certainly can't double cover Josh Gordon, which means that someone's going to be open if you're focusing too much attention on one or two other players besides Hogan. So, again, I do think that Hogan will have a stretch where he'll give you 2 or 3 straight games of solid production, but he's never going to be that guy that you're going to plug in the lineup on a weekly basis.
Bengals at the Falcons. Andy Dalton's been pretty good. Not that you would say he's been exceptional, but he's probably available in 95% of leagues, and he's throwing enough touchdowns at this point in the season, and he's got enough weapons around him. I like Ross, even though he hasn't done anything. Tyler Boyd, we talked about earlier. A.J. Green is still a number one wide receiver. So the Bengals are having a good season from a fantasy perspective. You got the Falcons, who are scoring like crazy as well. This looks like a game where all hands on deck. Is there anyone you're not starting in this one?
It would be hard not to start anyone on this one. If you've got any doubts, you're certainly, to me, the only guy that you would have any concern about would be a Tyler Eifert and an Austin Hooper, the tight ends for Cincinnati and Atlanta, respectively. But those guys are valid plays. So I don't think that there's anyone that I would just completely shut out. We talked about Calvin Ridley earlier. You're going to start your big guns on both teams. To me, I think the situation worth watching is what Gio Bernard. He went from healthy to questionable on Wednesday. So with Joe Mixon out for at least maybe one more game, and there's concern about, and if Bernard for some reason can't make it, suddenly you're looking at Mark Walton, their rookie from Miami. And it's a case where you might have to wait until the 11:30 list comes out on Sunday. You find out who's not dressing. And if you somehow do have both Mixon and Bernard not playing, then Walton has some value. I think that he might have some value, especially in a DFS league. And if you're in a deeper league and you have to own him and you get the opportunity to use him, I would plug him in. It might be the only time of the season you do, but he's a guy that's going to be able to move the chains for Cincinnati in a game where it looks like it could be fairly high scoring. He could be a difference maker here.
Brady's been bad. Russell Wilson's been bad. You're looking at that quarter. Deshaun Watson hasn't been good. Are you starting a Bengals and an Andy Dalton against the Falcons defense that isn't really stopping anyone? Are you starting a Matt Ryan against the Bengals defense who isn't really stopping anyone? Is a Dalton or a Ryan starting over a Russell Wilson or a Brady or a Watson or even a Rodgers who's banged up? You keep hearing questionable. I can't imagine he's not going to play again. But are you starting a Dalton or a Ryan? Are you making one of those cojones calls in dropping a big name for a Dalton or a Ryan?
Yeah, you know, I think that Matt Ryan's put himself back on the fantasy football map with what he's done over the past couple of weeks. You know, he's thrown 7 touchdown passes to 1 interception, and, you know, that shaky game that he had week 1 against Philadelphia has long forgotten. This guy's put up 82 fantasy points the last 2 weeks. So he's got a hot hand. He's at home against a Bengals team that's, you know, good but not great defensively. So, yeah, I'm going to play him. Would I put Dalton in there? Yeah, and it's one of those things where we talked earlier about there are some matchups where you might not want to put, you know, a third quarterback in. You know, this is one of those situations. If you've got a Kirk Cousins and you've got Andy Dalton, I think that you're probably going to lean more on the side of playing Dalton this week. Falcons are 27th against fantasy quarterbacks this season. So this is a good opportunity for Dalton. You know, he had a miserable game last week with the 4 picks, but he did throw for 352, and he's got 8 touchdown passes this season. So he's getting the ball in the end zone, and with, you know, the fact that you've got Tyler Boyd becoming a legitimate weapon in Cincinnati, it's only going to make Dalton that much more effective, especially if he can somehow get Gio Bernard in there. Bernard, if he's healthy and he's suiting up, you know, we know he's a solid PPR guy. He's going to have some opportunities to not only be a good receiver out of the backfield, but he's going to get some cracks against that Falcons defense, which has struggled at times against the run early on.
Detroit Lions at the Dallas Cowboys. Obviously, Zeke is a must-start in all leagues, and you'd be excited to own him. I'm intrigued by Kenny Golladay because he's kind of an emerging young talent, so I like those types of players. So I'm intrigued by him. But even the guys on the Lions or the Cowboys that you probably should be starting, I don't like owning them. I never own them. I don't like Golden Tate. I don't like Marvin Jones Jr. I don't like any of the tight ends. I just don't like either of these teams for the most part. I think Matthew Stafford's a good value, but I don't actually like owning him. And this year he hasn't actually been that great. He's been about the 15th to 16th ranked quarterback. So a guy who nobody really wanted to start the season is performing like a guy who probably no one should have wanted to enter the season. So you look at this matchup, and from a fantasy perspective, I don't like it much. Is there anything that you look at this matchup at all and say, you know what, this guy's actually a good take? As I said, it's not a lot of pretty, you know, there's nothing sexy on these teams, really. But if the matchup's good, then the matchup's good. Is there anywhere in this, is there any player where, in this case, the matchup's good?
I think that Kerryon Johnson could be a good matchup. He comes off a 100-yard game against New England on Sunday night, really didn't need a lot of touches to do it. He got 16. You know, this is a guy who's got a good yards per carry average. He's averaging 5.6 yards per crack. Has not scored a touchdown this season, and I think the thing that makes him appealing to me is the fact that, you know, when he is involved in the passing game, he's been pretty effective. You know, he's been targeted 12 times. He's got 10 catches for 52 yards. So in a PPR format, you know, he's going to have some value here. I think that he has established himself as the lead back in Detroit, and if he can give a solid follow-up and actually get in the end zone on Sunday, he's going to be someone who's going to really start climbing up that upper edge of the RB2 scene before long. He's a guy that I like. You know, I'm not starting any of the Cowboys receivers. You know, they're just, you know, as bad as the Patriots are, they look like the 99 Rams compared to what the Cowboys do these days. It's a bad situation at wide receiver. I'm not going to play Prescott. The Lions have actually done a pretty good job in containing fantasy quarterbacks, you know, quarterbacks' fantasy numbers this season. So really, you know, if you've got to choose 3 players to use, obviously Zeke's 1. Golladay in a PPR is actually intriguing because I think Marvin Jones is the wide receiver 2. And I would go ahead and roll with Kerryon Johnson. I think that there's some opportunity for him there.
Bills at Packers. You look at this Bills team, and I don't think it would be considered a hot take to say that they may not have a single fantasy viable player. LeSean McCoy's a name, but not only has he not been very good, but he's also really banged up this week. Is there anyone on the Bills that you're starting?
No, there's not. you like you mentioned, McCoy's got the banged up ribs. He says he's going to go. I would keep him on the bench. There's just really no upside here. There's really no one on Buffalo that I like this week. There's none of the receivers, tight end, no one really. So this is a week where, you know, you will do well if you don't have any Bills in your lineup. And if you do have Bills in your lineup, you are either in a very deep league or you did not draft very well.
I look at the Packers and I really see mostly disappointment. You look at all the talented players on that offense and it just seems like they should be much more explosive. Aaron Rodgers might be one of the best throwers of the ball. I don't think he's the greatest quarterback. I think Brady has run away with that. I don't even think it's an argument anymore. But if you're going to talk about just pure passers, Brady could never throw the ball quite as nicely as Aaron Rodgers. Granted, winning is more than just being a great arm. I mean, Dan Marino can tell you that. Aaron Rodgers has a good arm, but he's just a great pure passer. He puts the ball in a whole bunch of plays. He makes plays. He's amazing. You would think a guy that good would turn guys into monster superstars, and yet you look at all of the talent they've had. Jordy Nelson had some really great years, but you look at Cobb, you look at Allison, you look at Adams. I don't see superstars in any of those players, even though there's a lot of athleticism there. So while they're all productive, I don't get all that excited. To me, they feel like they're disappointments. That being said, they're going up against the Bills. Are you starting everybody to kitchen sink and their grandmother, are you being selective, or what's your evaluation of the Packers in this one?
I'm going to be selective. I think that we learned last Sunday about, you know, loading everyone up against the Bills. You know, if you had your Vikings and loaded up, thinking you're going to have a big afternoon, obviously you got burned. The one player that I like in Green Bay is going to be Aaron Jones. He came in, you know, debuted last week, had 6 carries for 42 yards. Jamal Williams is averaging under 4 yards a carry. The Bills have struggled against running backs. They're 28th in fantasy points allowed to running backs. I think that this is a game where Aaron Jones could sneak in and with about, say, 15, 18 touches, could really give you some yards, some all-purpose yards. I don't think he's going to be a great factor as a receiver, but if there's a Packer that intrigues me, it would be him. You're going to start Rodgers because, you know, he's Aaron Rodgers. It's a huge risk, but you're going to play him nonetheless. Out of the receiving core, there's really no one that, you know, just grabs your attention and says you've got to start him. You know, I agree with you in the sense that there's a lot of mediocrity in that receiving core. Darvin Adams. You know, Adams is a guy that Devontae Adams, I should say, you know, thinking about Canada, but Devontae Adams hasn't gotten off to such a strong start. He's got, you know, 3 touchdowns in his first 3 games. I think that, you know, maybe he's a wide receiver too, but to me, a lot of the Packers' fate is really tied into Rodgers, and you just don't know when that knee's going to give way.
Yeah, it looks like he is going to tough it out, and it is the argument that there are a lot of competent quarterbacks makes it interesting to talk about sitting Rodgers, but if you own him, I don't see how you can. He just throws the ball too well. Eagles at Titans. If you're stuck watching the Jaguars-Titans game last week, I feel bad for you. Not that this game is necessarily going to be that, but you're an Eagles guy, so I hate to kind of rip on your boys, but I just don't find a lot to like from a talent perspective on offense for those Eagles. I don't believe in Aguilar. I don't believe in Jeffrey. I don't believe in Ajayi, though he's not a bad running back. You know, he's maybe a low-end RB2, in my opinion, or at least he's a must-have flex, I would say, because he's probably getting enough carries where he's at, and he's not really contested, and he's getting them in the goal line. So I guess from a fantasy perspective, you have to like them a little, but I just don't like them. I don't see a lot of upside there. There's nobody on this Eagles offense that I really like, and there's really not a lot to like on the Titans. Maybe Corey Davis, but he's not doing it yet. So you can like him, but you have to like him while you're sitting him on the bench hoping that he finally becomes what you're hoping he would become. With Delanie Walker done for the year, I don't see a lot of guys to like here. And the matchups aren't great. The Titans' defense is relatively decent. The Eagles' defense is maybe well above average at times. Who do you like, or do you like anyone? And is this a matchup where maybe you see something that I'm just not liking because I just hate both of these teams?
I think obviously you're going to play Zach Ertz. He's a must start. But I will agree with you. The Eagles don't have a lot to offer as far as fantasy production is concerned. You look at the fact that Alshon Jeffrey may play this week, you know, still up in the air. Aguilar, you know, he gets lots of targets, but he really hasn't, you know, done a lot with them so far this season. They're lacking a wide receiver. They don't have that one guy that's going to be a difference maker. Jeffrey, I don't think, is going to be that guy to where it's going to really take that receiving corps to the next level, and you certainly don't want to put a lot of trust into Jordan Matthews. This is really one of those games where if you've got tight defense of the Eagles defense, you're going to play them because I do think this is going to be a pretty low-scoring game. Derrick Henry, some mild value there in a deeper league, maybe as a flex guy and a non-PPR, you know, just for the goal line potential. But beyond that, there's really not a lot that's appealing to me when it comes to fantasy in this game.
One thing that I noticed when I was writing my trending and noteworthy column was that Nelson Aguilar has been living on touches and targets. Not all that explosive, not a good yards per catch guy, not a lot of touchdowns. He isn't a serious red zone threat, but when you're targeted, you kind of can just force your way into a flex spot regardless of whether you're all that explosive or all that efficient. You can just purely based on touches and targets, you can find your way into a lineup in most leagues. But then Carson Wentz comes in week number 3, and his targets dropped to 5. Smallwood had the same amount of targets in the passing game as Nelson Aguilar did, which was a significant change from when Foles was the quarterback. Is this a trend that you think is happening, or is it just Carson Wentz first week back? It's just one game. It was matchup specific or game flow specific, or is Aguilar a guy whose touches and targets maybe are going to drop now that they have a different quarterback?
I think that they will probably drop slightly. The only guy that I think is going to cut into his targets would probably be Dallas Goedert. And that's a iffy proposition as well. You know, Goddard was more involved in week 3, scored his first NFL touchdown. And I think that he will continue to be more involved in the lineup. Again, Philadelphia doesn't have a great wide receiving core, but between Goddard and Ertz, you've got two good tight ends that can stretch defenses, especially in the middle of the field, and can make things happen. I look at Aguilar as being a guy that, you know, he's going to continue to get targets just really out of necessity because there's really no other options out there, at least for now. Maybe a few weeks from now, you look at the Eagles looking to consider trading for a wide receiver, or maybe there's someone off the street that they grab. Who knows? But right now, their receiving core is weak, and it's very weak if you take the tight ends out of there. And you also have to remember that throwing to their running backs. And this is a game also where, you know, the running backs are all going to be a wash.
Texans at the Colts. Deshaun Watson, I'll say it again, how he was being drafted, where he was being drafted was beyond irrational to me. I thought that was just outright ridiculous that he was being drafted as a second quarterback off the board after Aaron Rodgers. That was just insane. Is he a buy low, though? You know, he's been so bad. People have to be so frustrated early, so mediocre, and people have to be so frustrated. It seems like he could be a buy low, but there's buy low and then there's just buy bad. What is Deshaun Watson to you?
Deshaun Watson does have some buy low potential. He did throw for nearly 400 yards in the loss last week against the Giants. I don't think this Texans team is good. And I think that because of that, he's going to have value because they're going to be throwing the ball to catch up in a lot of ball games. And this might be one of them. J.J. Watt had a huge game last week. But there's always that, you know, counter and the fact that, you know, the Giants have a pretty poor offensive line, so it's bound to happen. Lamar Miller is not exciting. He really isn't giving you much, you know, as far as fantasy appeal is concerned. Will Fuller, if he's healthy, you know, he's at back 100-yard game when he's healthy. So I think that, you know, you're going to see them throw the ball around a lot And a lot of it obviously could be futile because they're in playing, you know, catch up. But I do think that you could get Deshaun Watson low this week. And if you can, I would consider looking at him because I think that he's going to be that a Matthew Stafford of sorts in the sense that he's going to put up some pretty solid numbers. But in reality, it's not going to matter a damn because they suck.
With the Colts, you're probably starting T.Y. Hilton. I mean, he's an explosive guy, and he's having a pretty good season. Other than Hilton, though, there's not a lot to like in Indianapolis, especially since things aren't really shaking out. You've got a whole bunch of running backs kind of stealing from each other. I like Hines, but I don't think he really can earn even a flex spot at this point. He definitely hasn't based on what his performance has been. Is it T.Y. Hilton and nobody else, or is there someone on that Colts offense where you feel like maybe they're a flex?
And deeper leagues, maybe you might want to take a shot at Andrew Luck. But T.Y. Hilton, and if you look up his numbers against the Texans throughout his career, he is, you know, he's T.Y. to Houston fans, and that means tortured yearly. He's got 63 catches, over 1,100 yards and 9 touchdowns, over 12 games. He's got 5 100-yard games against him, and he's got a 200-yard game against him. So when you look at what Hilton can do, and you've got Luck back there, you know that Indianapolis is going to try to test the Texans secondary with Hilton. There really isn't anyone else that I could see benefiting. I agree with you. I like Hines a lot, but that running back by committee is just a mess right now, and it's something that, you know, I really would not touch. Doyle could be back at tight end. He might have some appeal there, but other than Hilton, there's no one in Indianapolis that I've got a lot of faith in.
I'm feeling like Debbie Downer here, but I look at every single game that we're matching up against, and I can't get excited about, it seems like, many players on many of the teams. Jets at Jaguars. Jaguars coming off a 9-6 loss after a big-time win over the Patriots 2 weeks ago. That Patriots win isn't looking anywhere near as impressive after you see what the Patriots have been doing recently. And then you see them lose 9-6 to a Titans team that's really not very good. Again, I guess if Fournette's playing, I guess you have to play him no matter how bad he's banged up. But I could see you looking at this game and not playing a single player from either one of these teams, too. I mean, there's not a lot to like here.
No, there's not. Fournette. He could be a game-time decision once again, which means that T.Y. Hilton gets in there. This isn't a week where I would feel confident in playing Blake Bortles. Keelan Cole, maybe a deep flex option. But beyond that, there really isn't a lot of appeal there. When you look at the Jets, there's really not anything there either because you're certainly not going to plug Sam Darnold against the Jaguars defense. That's not going to happen. Maybe Isaiah Crowell in a non-PPR. Bilal Powell in a PPR might have some mild value. I'm really not, you know, enamored with any of the Jets' receivers against Jacksonville. So, yeah, this is another one of those games where, you know, you might be better off just not putting anyone in there.
And definitely do not watch it. Unless you like to watch stifling defenses. You could see a game where the Jaguars, their defense will probably put up more points than any fantasy player, including the quarterback. So you could see that. I wouldn't be surprised if Darnold had a really rough day and the Jaguars had a bunch of picks and maybe even a couple of pick sixes for touchdowns. So it wouldn't surprise me at all to see that. And what's odd, you got Jets, Jaguars, and we're talking about how negatively I'm talking about these teams. Then I go to Browns, Raiders, and this is a game that, again, I'm not overly frosty excited about. But the Browns, you look at the running backs. Carlos Hyde is not exciting. He doesn't have a great per-carry average, but he's putting up the yards to some degree when he gets the touches, and he's scoring touchdowns. I think he's second in the league in touchdowns. You look at Marshawn Lynch, again, not exactly a guy that's explosive and doing a lot per carry, but the yards are there. The opportunities are there. You look at Landry, again, I don't know how much you're going to love Mayfield, but the guy gets the receptions. He's putting up the yards, not a lot of touchdowns, and that's probably what you par for the course. But there seems to be a lot of viable fantasy guys here. Before you get into who you like or don't like in this matchup, let me ask you real quickly. You buying Jordy Nelson?
I think for right now I will buy it to Nelson. It looks like so far it's a pretty nice career revival. I think that when I look at Nelson, I see a guy that still has some wide receiver to appeal for the most part. I would go ahead and play him. I think that, you know, he's going to get you, you know, he's going to get targeted, you know, 10 to 12 times. I think that he will get about maybe 5 or 6 receptions, and maybe he gets Christ 100 yards here. Right now, I'm going to run with him because I think that he has a little bit of upside, and he's coming in here with a little momentum after that big 173-yard game that he had last week. But at the same time, I can understand why, you know, fantasy owners would be a bit hesitant because prior to last week, he had 5 catches for 53 yards and no touchdowns. So this might be a week where we figure out, you know, what Jordy Nelson are we going to get? Are we going to get a guy who is still somewhat fantasy viable at age 33, or was last week just a blip on the radar?
The Raiders are allowing 45.4 fantasy points per week to wide receivers. Landry's a must-start, I think, no matter who the matchup is against. But with the Raiders being such a nice place to land as a wide receiver, are you taking a flyer here? I mean, they looked better under Mayfield. There's some uncertainty there. At least in DFS, you're probably finding very good prices on the other Cleveland Brown wide receivers. Are you kind of, are you gonna wing it here and go up and look at this as a really good matchup, even though there's no really good options? Would you recommend any other Browns other than Landry?
Well, you touched on the running backs. Those are, you know, iffy proposition. If you're in a touchdown dependent league, you're probably going to look plugging in Carlos Hyde, you know, yardage totals be damned. The guy that intrigues me really is Antonio Callaway. The Raiders are 29th in fantasy points allowed to opposing wide receivers. And Callaway is a guy that the Browns like getting the ball to. He got 10 targets last week. You know, really didn't do much with them, 4 catches for 20 yards, but he did have 3 for 81 and a touchdown the week before against New Orleans. So to me, I think that, you know, you look at Callaway, he's going to get an opportunity here to really prove that he belongs in the starting roster. You know, a lot of their focus in Oakland is going to be trying to slow down Jarvis Landry, but Callaway's a guy who could be sneaky good in deeper leagues. And if you're looking, you know, for that low end, high reward guy in your DFS, Callaway could be one of those players that you might want to consider.
Seahawks go to Arizona, over-under of 39. I mean, what has happened to these two teams? Russell Wilson's having a bad year. Carson finally had a decent week last week as a running back. Not a lot to love at the wide receiver position for the Seahawks. Cardinals, what a mess. But the Cardinals are at least intriguing because Fitzgerald is a talented player. David Johnson is an extremely talented player, and they've finally got a new quarterback at the helm with Rosen starting this week. What do you think the impact is of having Rosen be their starter? And are you selling on David Johnson? I mean, you can't really sell any lower, but like I keep saying, if you think a guy's going to be bad, then there really is no such thing as selling low. You're just selling bad. What are your thoughts on Rosen's impact and whether you're selling on Johnson?
This week, I don't think you're going to see much of an impact out of Rosen. He is a rookie quarterback. The Seahawks defense did show at times last week that they can still, you know, drop the hammer on an offense. And I think this is something that you will probably see again. As far as David Johnson, that's a tough call. He's going to have value in PPR because of the receiving skills, obviously. But if someone gives you lots of phone call and asks, you know, for David Johnson, you might want to at least listen. I'm not ready to give up on him 3 weeks into the season, but if he continues to struggle, with that Arizona offense over the next couple of weeks, you have to start asking yourself, it might be time to cut bait as far as making a trade and trying to see if you could sell him before he really reaches the bottom.
Saints at Giants, over under of 50. There's looking like a lot of points here. They're playing in New York, 425 game. Kamara and Michael Thomas have been beasts. Drew Brees is having another nice season. That being said, wide receivers are going silly against the Saints so far. 63 points per contest for wide receivers. Odell Beckham has been a guy that we haven't really talked about much this year, but is this a game where you just absolutely love him? Are the Saints just someone you want to feast on?
Oh, God, yes. Yeah. You certainly want Odell Beckham in your lineup this week. Like you mentioned, the Saints are getting slaughtered fantasy-wise by opposing wide receivers, and the gap between them and the Chargers at number 31 is pretty wide. This is a game where, you know, and I would even consider, you know, bringing in a Sterling Shepard. Rhett Ellison, the tight end that's replacing Evan Engram, is a very intriguing prospect. He caught all three of his targets for 39 yards, got a touchdown. You know, the Giants do love to run a lot. It's a two tight end set, so he's going to be on the field a lot. He's someone that could, you know, be a sneaky good play in the red zone. I think he's more along the lines of a high-end tight end too, and you might be able to justify using him as a tight end one on a low-end scale. So he's someone that I would really take a look at as far as the Giants are concerned. Obviously, you're starting Saquon Barkley. And I think, again, as we talked earlier, there are some matchups where you've got good quarterbacks that, you know, you might not want to play. You might not want to play Kirk Cousins on Thursday night. So if you're in that situation, you might want to consider playing Eli Manning here, because I think that Eli is going to get some shots. He did throw for nearly 300 yards against the Texans last week, and the Texans are far better defense than New Orleans. And again, that's an that's an opportunity for Eli, you know, to really light a secondary up. It's at home. It's a nationally televised game. Late afternoon start. So this is the type of game where, you know, I can see, you know, going all in on your Giants could pay off.
49ers at Chargers. This is an interesting game because I think Phillip Rivers is one of the more underappreciated players. I mentioned in my column, Mike Williams is really a guy who I still think Keenan Allen's the best receiver on their roster, but if you're in a dynasty league, Mike Williams is the guy you actually want to own going forward. I'm a big fan of Melvin Gordon. I think he's underrated, even though Mike Salfino from The Athletic, he keeps talking about how Eckler is the better running back. He's on this rampage of a crusade to get Gordon essentially kicked out of the league and to insert Austin Eckler as their number one running back, which to me is ludicrous. I, if anything, as I said, I think Gordon is underrated. So I like a lot of the guys on the Chargers, but I also, as much as I've hated on pretty much every team we've talked about over the last three or four games, I like the 49ers too. I love Marcus Goodwin. I think he's a really good value. I really like Matt Breida. I'm liking him more and more with every week. Kittle at tight end, I was really liking him. Unfortunately now, and this is where my question comes, with Jimmy G not there, and it looks like Beathard's the boy, do I have to downgrade everybody? I was reading one stat where Beathard checks down to his running back more than any quarterback in like NFL history or something. So if that's the case, then I love Breida, but I don't know if that's a fluke or a small sample size situation. What's the impact of a guy who I was negative about? I ripped on Jimmy G in the opening, but the fact is, there's a big difference between Jimmy G being less than expected and Beathard, who probably should be serving burgers, not serving up touchdowns.
If you look at how slow the 49ers have been as far as trying to grab a veteran off the street, I think it's a sign that they've got some faith in Beathard. He hasn't given me any reason to have any right now. He certainly isn't a top 25 quarterback this week. But it's a wait and see. Let's find out as to whether or not, you know, this guy can, you know, produce. You know, I touched on it a few seconds ago. about the fact that the Chargers are 31st in fantasy points allowed to opposing wide receivers. So this could be the kind of game where they're getting the ball downfield. Goodwin's eating. Dante Pettis could be someone that could be a factor in there as well. You also, figure that the rest of the receiving core should be pretty solid. Pierre Garçon should be a guy that you might want to take a look at as well in deeper league format. So I'm not going to completely say that it's time to just hop off of the 49ers as far as their offensive players are concerned, but obviously what Beathard does on Sunday is going to go a long way as to whether or not you hop off them completely or whether you maintain some hope that these guys can be productive.
Ravens at Steelers on Sunday night. I think this is going to be an intriguing game. It's got an over-under of 51. The Steelers don't seem like they can stop anybody. And even when Big Ben looks bad, he still puts up touchdowns. Joe Flacco, to say he's having a great year would be a stretch. But considering how little I think most people probably expected from him, you'd probably have to say he's having a good one or even a resurgent season. I mean, he's in the top 15. He's got 889 passing yards so far, 6 touchdowns. So while, again, that's not amazing, that's actually almost as many passing yards as Patrick Mahomes. And Patrick Mahomes is the story of the NFL other than Fitzmagic. So Flacco's having a pretty good year by what we normally would grade him on as far as the curve goes. It looks like this one could have a lot of points. It looks like there's a lot of potential here. Give me your thoughts on Ravens-Steelers.
Flacco is having a revival because of the fact that he's got receivers that he could actually get the ball to. You look at the past couple of years, his receiving core was pretty bad. But now you give him Michael Crabtree, give him John Brown, and suddenly, he's got some guys who can wing it. He still has a cannon of a right arm. So, make no mistake, he's struggled, but Flacco can still go if you give him the weapons. I like John Brown a lot this week. The Steelers have given up 15 passing plays of 20 yards or more, and Brown's got 4 already. He's not getting a lot of targets, but he's averaging damn near 19 yards a catch. And you've got to think that Flacco's going to take some shots on that weak Pittsburgh secondary. So he could be a real good play this week. Buck Allen, I think, in PPR formats, he's the short yardage guy. He's going to give you a lot as far as rushing yards. But if they're in the red zone, especially near the goal line, you've got to figure he's the guy they're going to look at. He's someone that I would definitely take a look at as well. Alex Collins, there's some mild appeal there, but I think that this might be a week where Allen might have a little more value than Collins.
Monday night, ESPN actually gets a decent one. I don't know if it's a decent one or what it is, because I don't know what to make of the Broncos, but anytime you got Patrick Mahomes, you've got one good thing going, and they're facing the Broncos in Denver. What do you make of this Denver team? I've been a defender of Demaryius Thomas, not when he was at his peak, because I thought he was overrated when he was considered a stud number one. But once he fell off the mountain and became kind of just another name, I thought he was underrated. I always thought he was a little bit better than that. Suffered from the fact that they've had some really bad quarterbacks there. I've always been a fan of Emmanuel Sanders, and I don't know what to make of that running situation there at this point. But I thought Keenan would go there and they would be good. I didn't think that the Denver would be as good as Minnesota was last year. I didn't think Keenan would play as well there as he did in Minnesota. But you could argue that Thomas and Sanders are, at their best, were probably better than Thielen and Diggs from last year. But obviously they're not at their best anymore. So when you count regression, they're not as good. But it's still not a bad pair. This is an over-under of 56. From a fantasy perspective, the idea is that this one's going to be crazy. Give me your take on the Broncos. Are there any surprises? What are you doing with their, for example, let's start with the running back. Are Lindsey and Freeman both starters? Are neither one of them starters? How are you dealing with that situation?
I would probably lean more toward Freeman this week. I like Lindsey, don't get me wrong, but I think that over the long haul, Freeman's probably going to be your guy. I look at Denver. Keenum's not really regarded as a good play this week, but you have to think Kansas City's 30th in fantasy points allowed to opposing quarterbacks. So, you know, he could be a sneaky good play here. The only concern I would have would be, you know, the forecast does call for thunderstorms on Monday night, so the weather could, you know, provide, you know, could impact Keenum's production. So I wouldn't go too far out on a limb and trying to use him. I would agree with you. Demaryius Thomas, you know, fell off, you know, mainly because the quarterback play fell off. It's picked up a little bit. He's kind of having a bit of a revival. Emmanuel Sanders is off to a pretty solid start. And I'm thinking that they'll continue to find ways to get their rookie Cortland Sutton involved in the offense as well. This could be a game where Sutton gets some significant targets here because, again, Kansas City struggles badly against opposing receivers as well. Also are near the bottom when it comes to fantasy points allowed to opposing running backs. Could be a case where you really could bet you might be able to justify, you know, saying that Lindsey and Freeman are starters. I think, you know, Lindsey's going to have far more value in a PPR, whereas Freeman in a non-PPR is going to have some value.
He's Brandon C. Williams. I'm Chris Mitchell, both writers over at rotoexperts.com. You can follow us on Twitter, at BCWilliams71 for him, at CJMitch73 for me. If you want to talk with us on Facebook, it's the Roto Experts Fantasy Sports Show. And let's get to that right now, Brandon, before we get out of here. Let's take the fantasy, the Roto Experts Fantasy Sports Show questions directly from the chat room itself. And we've got John Yuri asks, David Njoku, Will Disley, or do you drop one of those and pick up Trey Burton? Who you got?
Oh, you're dropping one of them to get Burton. Burton, I think, was going to have a real solid week. And why Trey Burton is sitting out in someone's waiver wire is really beyond me.
Yeah, he hasn't been as exciting as people was hoping, but to drop him is probably a reach. All right, we got Brian. He says, do you guys think Josh Gordon is worth giving up Matt Ryan and if you still have Cousins as your quarterback?
No. Matt Ryan, I think, like I said earlier, is in the midst of a fantasy revival. Josh Gordon, at some point in time, you're going to have to start separating the potential with the reality. And the reality is that, you know, potentially he's good, but until he can prove that on a more consistent basis, Josh Gordon's value is very overrated.
Yeah, I'm concerned about that too. Extremely high ceiling. I think you probably have to start him this week, but let me ask you that real quick. Do you have to start Gordon? When you look at that ceiling, you look at that potential, you look at him with a Tom Brady as their quarterback, do you have to start Gordon, even if it's a Hail Mary lottery type of pick? That's kind of my sense. It just feels like I don't want to be the guy that benches him when he gets 140 yards and two touchdowns. Even though I think that's extremely unlikely, he probably does very little or nothing. It just feels like you have to use him. I don't know. What's your take there?
I think that, you know, you might not want to use him this week. Again, I think he will play with that question. My thing is that, you know, I don't think that he's going to have a lot of snaps. I'm probably guessing about, say, maybe 25, 30 snaps at best, which means he'll probably get about maybe a half dozen or so targets. You know, we've seen what he can do with, you know, few targets, but at the same time, he is still learning this New England offense. So I think you have to level your expectations as to what you're getting out of it.
All right. Bradford asks, he's got Phillip Rivers and he's also got Cousins. Would you trade Cousins for Ingram?
Yeah, I probably would. Is it Mark Ingram or Evan Ingram?
Mark Ingram.
Probably would make that move. I think that it's a move. I think that if you need the depth at running back, now is a good time to go after Ingram before he does get back, because I think that, you know, it won't take long for him to get back in stride and become a very solid RB2.
All right. Danny asks, and we talked about this a little bit, but just for the sake of the question, will Rosen revive the Cardinals offense enough to make Fitzgerald relevant once again, or should he drop Fitzgerald and add Ridley?
No, you're not dropping Larry Fitzgerald at this point. I think that you're going to need some time for Josh Rosen to develop, and asking him to you know, put up monster numbers against the Seahawks in his first start. It's just asking way too much on that one. Give him time. Give him about maybe 3 or 4 games and then base it from there. If that offense is starting to show signs of life with them, by all means, you're keeping Fitzgerald. But if not, you might want to consider moving him. But right now, you are not cutting Larry Fitzgerald.
All right. It looks like we've got all the questions answered. So that's it. We went through the waiver wire. We looked at the ads and the drops. We went game by game through the entire slate. I think we have done it, and we've done it in 90 minutes, which is quick for us. The first one was 2 hours and 15 minutes. I think we did it in about 1 hour and 40 minutes last week. Now we're right at 1:30. Good timing, good rush. We got everything in. Maybe it's because I was so down on so many of the teams that it was just easier. Plus, we have one less game. The Redskins and the Panthers are both on bye this week. So that maybe helped a little bit as well. That's probably saved us maybe 5 minutes. He's Brandon C. Williams. You can follow him on Twitter at BCWilliams71. You can follow me, Chris Mitchell, at CJMitch73. Or you can read our fantasy content over at rotoexperts.com. Any last thoughts before we bolt here? Thursday Night Football is coming up in about 24 hours or 22 hours. But any last thoughts before we get out of here?
Should be a good one on Thursday night. But if you have AP, you can always follow me. I'm the syndicated columnist for Fantasy Sports for the Associated Press. I do these sits and starts that are published across the country on Thursdays and Fridays. So look for those. There will be a few interesting sits and starts in there as usual. So look for them wherever Associated Press is found.
That's Brandon C. Williams. I'm Chris Mitchell. Thanks, everybody, for tuning in. That is the Roto Experts Fantasy Sports Show. Hoping to have Ricky Sanders on Friday. Usually we do it on Thursdays, but he's got a little bit of a deadline conflict. So we're looking to talk some daily fantasy football, hopefully on Friday afternoon around 1 o'clock. We'll see if we can get to that. I want to have Ricky on. He's been doing a great job, and he's been making me money. Anyone who makes me money, I want to get them on board. I want to know who he's got, who he likes, so that I can make money again. I've been cashing in like crazy this season, so I want to not only cash, but I want to cash at the top. I haven't been winning tournaments, but I've been cashing every time. So look for that. Follow me on Twitter at CJMitch73. See when Ricky comes on board. Hopefully, again, it'll be Friday afternoon, but I'll confirm that tomorrow and hopefully bring that on board, because I could definitely use a few more ducats in my wallets. Thanks, everybody, for tuning in. Catch us next week, Wednesday night, 9 o'clock. We'll look at week number 5 in fantasy football, but hopefully we helped you out this week. Good luck, everybody, in week number 4.